Hey, welcome back.
Welcome back to me as well. Blind Bargains 196 for the middle of October 2019, right after a Google event, Joe.
Oh, wait, it's just you, right? It's the entire... Oh, no, I'm here too.
You can do that if you want.
I'm here. I made it through the Google event. I wish to show my pledge and that I did it. I endured. I endured the Google event.
Well, you know, well, some things don't change. I just got back in town, and thank you so much, Joe and Patrick, for putting together the show last week. Lots of really cool features that you can go check out, and I'll return the favor at some point soon. Oh, and by the way, I'm doing a ship to order.
Oh, cool. All right. Well, again,
this is not familiar. This is not a rerun. This is not a rerun. Although I think it's actually going to arrive.
I'm proud that I had a lot of Google stuff last week too. I thought that was kind of neat, and we usually take some time off between events anyway. And there is a lot of links over at blindbargains.com about the Google event. So what we don't cover here, you definitely always want to check the show notes on a wrap up show, because there's so much more background that we usually get even after recording putting up there on that list.
So lots of stuff to dissect and compare, you know, probably not enough to fill a whole show. There actually are some non-Google things, and if we have time, we'll get to a few other news highlights that have been floating around as well. So it may not be an entire Google show, so don't tune out if you're like, I have an iPhone, I don't care anything about this. But we have other things for you as well that we will probably have time for.
And a lot of the services they talk about work with iOS. Mm-hmm. So, hey, you can't
including
say no
a demo.
To that.
Including a demo that I will be doing in a few minutes. Well, I'll actually be doing it tomorrow morning, but through the magic of recording, I'll be doing it in a few minutes.
The beauty of the time-space continuum in recording.
Yes. So this, you watched it. I did not, but I definitely read lots of these links that you have in the show notes at blindbargains.com. So start us off.
The episode begins with a commentary by me saying that it was on the East Coast. It was 10 o'clock and it was over quicker before lunch.
That's
so
why I missed
it. Like those events. Those events rock. I know if you're on the West Coast, you're not a big fan, but man, it is nice to have that event one and done and out. But it wasn't your typical event, right? It wasn't the Apple way of doing things where they come out and they're very flashy and they do a bunch about numbers and all this other stuff and then break it down into detailed looks at the features and the phone and talk about the manufacturing. And it wasn't like the Microsoft event, which was very low key. This was more of a story driven event where everything that they were talking about layered into something else. It was like a continuous narrative. It was very interesting, but it was also not sexy. As we've talked about in September with Shelley, that kind of stuff that Apple does kind of grabs your attention. This was more like being in a mathlete class, where if you like technology and you like computational algorithms and ideas, then you're right at home. If not, this might have been too dry and geeky for you, especially when they did get to the camera area. They started off, though, with the thing that we will walk right past, Stadia, their Google thing that they're doing for gaming, which is a streaming cloud gaming service. It launches in November, and that had some interesting things. They're actually talking to software developers about making game lag faster by predicting your button presses. So that has a lot of people in the gaming industry scratching their heads.
Huh.
I'm not sure about progressive guessing that I was going to press the A button.
Auto-predict, you know. game button presses. Okay.
Yeah. I could go back to Las Vegas for that. But, you know, there is a lot of... It's interesting, though, because for me, this was kind of a bookend, right? Because when I was in San Francisco for the Game Accessibility Conference with Jesse Anderson, the interesting thing there was that Google was really hyping up the developers, and there were a lot of people talking about Stadia and what that was going to be. It hadn't been named at that time, but it was fascinating to see the idea of what was being said back at the beginning of the year finally coming out this year and how much support it had. But they do have like a founders pack, so you could actually get that and have your controllers and everything that'll work with it. They have some major people working with it, but
no accessible games. So
no. Yeah, and it was really quick too, because it was like, hey, by the way, that thing that we've been talking about comes out in November. So about these Pixel Buds, they just moved on into, you know, things like Pixel Buds. And the Pixel Buds were really interesting because you're talking about a second generation product. You're talking about the ability to do some of this live transcription stuff even better than what they've done before. It's important because when we get to the phones don't come with anything in the box other than a charger.
Yeah.
So you're kind of looking at these as, you know, a possibility of using them for $179. They'll come out next year. They work a little better for ears.
The range,
they
have different, right?
Yeah. What is it? Football field or at least three rooms away.
That has to be a different type of Bluetooth technology that's able to, if it's Bluetooth 5, and I'm guessing the range is going to be dependent on which phone you're pairing that with, if you're doing it with a...
A lot of their devices were using LFE Bluetooth, and in fact, all of them hit like the Bluetooth consortium an hour before they were announced, so that's how some people found out about what Bluetooth it was using. There was a beautiful article, I can't remember which tech did it, but I'll have to find it and put it in the show notes. But it was talking about the war, the next electronic war isn't watches, isn't tablets. It's the war for your ears.
The war for your ears. So, you know, I'm not the first one that jumps on the wireless earbuds, but I know in the AirPod owners, there's tons and tons of people that love them. And it's the same thing here. Obviously, they're going to work best with the latest Pixels, including the Pixel 4 that we'll get to in just a few minutes.
Yeah. So you got beamforming microphones.
Yeah.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
I'm just saying the first generation certainly left something to be desired, at least from the reviews that we've.
And I think they learned from that in the same way that Microsoft learned from the Surface headphones and then made the Surface earbuds that we saw 2 weeks ago. I think it's a hard thing to have because you see Amazon playing around with the same thing, you know, with their Amazon frames, their Echo frames. Where they're doing something like that, or the Ring, the Echo Ring, and they do have Echo Buds. So everybody has something like it. And either you say that this was a category that morphed into things after Apple showed that you could make money at it with AirPods, or you say it's a brand recognition thing, right? Because Apple started that years ago with the iPod. You knew what the iPod was in those ads. You knew somebody had it. It was iconic. It was branding. You know what AirPods are because they look kind of silly, and now we've kind of been normalized to their look. Sony, when we met with them back at CSUN, went out of their way to talk about their versions of earbuds, and they had a big hit this year with some of their noise cancellation units. So everybody is definitely gearing up, and I don't know whether it's just it's easy to produce.
It's the brand upsell. It's the brand upsell too. I mean, if you're buying a phone, I mean, if you're going to buy a pair of earbuds, wow, you're going to probably want the ones that, you know, say they will work with the phone. Of course, you could buy any number of pairs of headsets or whatever, but if you can get a whole family of things, and of course, these work with the Google Assistant too. So if you're already using the phone, or even any, you know, most other Android phones, you're going to want to use Google Assistant. And there you go. Pixel Buds.
Yep. Better, like I said a moment ago, kind of beamforming for the microphone so it picks up your voice better. It is refined, 5 hours of battery life, charging case, all that fun stuff. So I think that's interesting. And it did work with their, you know, live translation feature, which they've shown off before. And their captioning, which I think is really interesting. We have a couple of links in the notes about how Google talked about if it has audio, they can caption it. And so they meant on the web or in person with these Pixel Buds. So that's how fast some of this is happening, because there's more on-device stuff that we'll get to in a little bit about how that makes it a little easier.
Yes.
And then we left the Pixel Buds to go into things like, I know you're ready for this, Jay. I know you want a Pixelbook Go in black or pink.
Pink. Absolutely pink.
$649, and it is...
Is it really pink, or is it like pleasantly pink, or almost pink?
I've already forgotten the funny name, because they all have the funny names for what they are. But $649, mid-range, coming down a little bit from where the Pixelbook C and other ones were.
Yep.
Actually, you know, this was kind of where the price for Samsung Chromebooks were not so long ago, but it's a really nice-looking flagship laptop for Chrome OS, if that's what you're looking for.
Which is...
And you'll see it at a lot of events.
It's the same old dance, though, isn't it? Right? So where has Chrome OS actually taken off? In education, right? For kids, which are probably not buying $700 flagship laptops. You look at the share. I was just looking at operating system share. Windows at 70-something percent, Mac at 10-15, and there's Chrome somewhere around near Linux. And for education, obviously, it's huge, and it's taken off quite a bit, and they've done really good on that market. And maybe, you know, maybe they should be focusing more there. Obviously, had a lot of hard times, you know, to be the third player in operating systems is just about as hard as Microsoft being the third player in phones. You know?
so much so that they hooked up with the number one guy in Android. Right. So, yeah.
Right. You know, at this point in the game, it's not a new opinion, but obviously it's hard for people to go out and buy a Chromebook as your primary device. Now, I've talked to some people that work at Google, people that work in accessibility at Google. Accessibility-wise, the features are there now. So if you wanted to choose Chrome OS, you can do it. You don't have roadblocks there to accessibility. You can use Braille. You can plug in Braille displays. You can do speech. The speech is great. And you can operate the machine as long as the apps that you need and want are there. And of course, the fact that you can run Android apps is huge. That's certainly a big change from years ago. You know, the fact that you can now bring Android apps onto Chromebooks, and that makes it a little more appealing. If Google Docs and screen readers, as I know they're doing lots of improvements, if they can continue in that vein and make it so you get the same amount of feedback from Docs as you do from Microsoft Office on Windows with JAWS or NVDA, then you might have something there for sure.
Well, Microsoft put out a post this week saying at the time of recording that they were contributing things back to Chromium for Chromium Edge that was making accessibility better for high contrast, for reading blocks with screen readers, for form controls. And we had thought on this show that maybe Microsoft working on Android might bring some more accessibility features to the operating system. And now we're starting to see that kind of happen, from this blog post that just recently came out from Microsoft. So that partnership really could bring a lot to it, especially since Microsoft seems to be playing all sides of Android, working with Samsung, with the launcher, and doing things like that, or just straight up being a Chrome partner and bringing on the Google Play Store, as we talked about just two episodes ago.
Yeah. Looking a little more at this, the Pixelbook Go, just to fill in some gaps for people who want a description, 13.3 inches. You don't have the crazy swivel touch screen thing going on, which is probably a good thing.
It's 2 pounds.
That's not about what my laptop is, my Lenovo. It's the bottom is ribbed for your pleasure, apparently. No, it's absolutely for easier grip.
Grippable is what you might like there.
Yes,
ruggedized. For sure. Yeah. You know, you could have asked your Nest Home Mini for the specs. I'm certainly sure it would have told you had you asked it. The branding here is going to get really weird. So Google Home slowly is becoming Google Nest, as Google has pulled Nest back into the Nest. And that means a lot of things are getting renamed and changed and weird. And I actually said something about Google on the web, and Google Nest wrote me back on Twitter. And I had to remember, wait, why are the people with the thermostat writing me about my Chromecast speakers? That's what they do now.
Branding. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right on it. And so the new Mini is still $49, has three microphones instead of two, has kind of a hole in it. It says it makes it a little bit better for sound and bass. Comes with a wall mount, so you don't have to buy that separate. So for the $49, you're actually getting a bit more on board. But I didn't feel moved that I needed to pre-order one. I've already got a Google Home Mini, and I'm cool with that. But those who are looking to get into that, this is still an affordable way for you to get into things by grabbing a Google Nest Mini. And then JJ said,
There's no headphone jack. I thought that was the rumor, that there was going to be a headphone jack in this thing. And I know the headphone jack is falling out of style in some arenas, but that's a missed opportunity. I know plenty of people that bought the Echo Dot specifically because they wanted a headphone jack to plug it into their stereo system. Bluetooth is cool, but it's still a little laggier. So that's a big surprise. On the positive side, you compare two together. So for under 100, you can have two paired together in stereo. Now, you could pair two homes together before, but they were in dual mono.
Yep. But or you could buy two giant Maxes and put I have those right over there in the corner.
And they've gotten a lot cheaper as well. So I think it's a lot of it is like the Dots, though. You don't need to replace your current ones, but, you know, if you're going to buy another one, or if you want an excuse to give this one to the kids, yeah,
then that's the way to go.
Then they'll go on sale. If they want there for $30 in a month, then get it.
And that's the way I felt about some other devices that we'll get to in a little bit. But yeah, there was some other hardware, but that's really not what you came for. You came here to hear us talk about
the router?
New one. Yeah, well, you know, what's cool about the router is that the Wi-Fi extenders that you can get for the new Google Nest Wi-Fi router actually can serve as Google Assistant devices. So they can actually...
It's like a two-in-one.
Yeah. So for like $279.
Cool. Yeah, there's it's a mesh router that you can buy. So there've been mesh routers before. Google has had their routers, but now they have Google Assistant built in, or at least some of them do. Unless you buy it from Amazon, because they don't want to sell, they won't let you sell Google Assistant products on Amazon. Those will just be Nest routers. But if you're looking to buy a router and you're looking to buy a Google Assistant, well, maybe you could combine the two into one thing. So that's all I'll say on that. It's kind of cool. Yeah. Oh, yeah. The phones.
Oh, yeah. Those things. Pixels. Yeah. Those Pixels. They, like Apple, spent a lot of time on their photography, but it was actually very fascinating having already gone through a couple of events where cameras took the forefront of things. What I thought was really interesting was that they talked a little bit about light and low light and how they are doing things with computational photography. So not as many cameras on the phone, not as crazy camera, of 5 zillion pixels, but they're doing more inside the idea of math on board the camera. Now, you might think, okay, I don't care. I don't take photography. I'm not into photos. But you should, because remember that Google is a part of, owns Waymo, self-driving cars. All its computational stuff is more and more drone and self-driving car tech that will come to us eventually in the consumer space when we were looking for cars that will drive us around. So there is some actual importance that's happening here when it comes to cameras. With that said, there's this way of doing air gestures. Now, we've seen this before with Samsung and others doing the kind of wave your hands in front of it and Harry Potter style call up different things. But, you know, some people have said, and I have an article here in the notes, that these gestures do work, that they are kind of helpful. They are kind of gimmicky. You might not use them all the time, but you might use them in some ways of like waving away a message or not reaching for your phone to silence it. And at the same time, there is no fingerprint sensor on this phone. So you're going to be using their version of Face ID. And they claim that that works a lot faster due to the front camera and the smarts that they have on board the phone that will detect that you're moving it and it'll try and find your face.
So this is actually a form of radar, the way I understand it. It kind of creates like a force field or some sort of detection within a foot or two of the phone as you move near it. So theoretically, you can kind of be reaching for the phone to silence it, and it will just see that you're doing that. And same thing with the Face ID. If it can sense that you're reaching for the phone, by the time you pick up the phone and look at it, there's not going to be an extra second of looking at it. It'll already be kind of in this, I'm ready for your face, all right, and go from there. Now, the usual caveats, the Face ID for the people that have used it on the iPhone, blind users, it's generally worked okay, other than the caveats of I like being able to unlock the phone from my pocket. But if it's really that swift and it can be that fast, then I'll be okay with it. I'm a little disappointed. Also because the fingerprint gesture, the sensor has been used for some additional gestures and things in TalkBack and in other places. So that's something that will be lost by removing another way to access items on the phone.
Yeah, I wasn't thrilled about this move. And it wasn't just because I'm not a big fan of the face unlock thing. I really enjoy fingerprint sensors for all the convenience that it can give us, opening your phone inside a purse or inside a pocket or under the table. So you actually can be doing things rather than directly looking at your phone, telegraphing to the world, I'm looking at my phone, everybody knows me. And I think that's really unfortunate, especially with all the wireless earbuds that we were just talking about a minute ago. I'm not sure, but most of the articles that I've been reading were like, if you're on a Pixel 2, this is going to be a great phone because it has 90 hertz refresh rate. So it looks faster. The motion works a lot better, but it has smaller battery. So it's going to be interesting to see if that affects things, especially in the cheaper version of the Pixel. The Pixel 4 comes in at $799.
The Pixel 4 XL
comes in at $899. If you pre-order, you actually can get a $100 gift card from many retailers, including the Google Play Store, which will not get you Pixel Buds, but get you halfway there.
Right. More than halfway.
There is no USB-C dongle. There is no headphone dongle. There are no headphones in the box. So it is your phone and your charger and you. But there are some other reasons to champion this phone. If you're into security, there's better security on this phone, as well as a chip that's going to do more on voice information. So the most common phrases and questions the Google Assistant gets, and Google has that information, they're putting onto the chip on the phone. So your weather, your schedule, your airport, things that it would normally be asked of the Google Assistant will happen on the phone. So it has to call home less. So it won't be calling Google as much to be able to get that informational query. It'll just go ahead and get all that information and store it on the phone. That also plays into the Pixel Buds thing we were talking about a moment ago. There's better on-screen / on-device recognition of text as well as spoken text. So more of that's being done on the phone rather than running to the web.
So yeah, this is really interesting. And right now it's one of those features that's unique to the Four, I have suspected it could, some of it could come back. Some of it's based on the chip, but some of it is also based on the on-device voice model. Google has been doing some sort of offline dictation for a while, and it's been hit or miss, but they've been going towards this method where everything is going to get translated offline. So you have two parts right now to your Google Assistant query. First of all, Google has to figure out what you're saying, and that was traditionally done by sending up your voice to the cloud, it detecting it, sending it back, you know, and then sending back a response. So if you can translate your text offline, that saves time. If you can actually produce the response offline, that's even better, because there are certain things, if my request is to open an app, well, we don't need to go to the cloud to that at all. That's entirely on the phone, and that apparently is happening a lot faster. So if you tell it to open apps or, well, hey, turn on TalkBack, because you can actually do that now, finally, or other on-device things that don't require anything off-device, it's going to be a lot faster, or doing dictation offline. So that kind of leads us to the voice app, the new voice recorder, which is way more than a voice recorder. And this is the one thing that I'm definitely jealous of, as far as looking at the 4 versus my 3 currently, or my 3XL currently, essentially allowing you to do voice dictation like you've always been able to do on a voice recorder. But while that's happening, that text is immediately being transcribed, and then you can search for words in the text that you just spoke. So that is really cool, especially if you're dictating a longer note or a message, or, you know, even perhaps recording an entire meeting. And, you know, obviously it depends on the quality of the audio that you feed into it and everything else. But the potential to be able to just go back right away, like, oh, yeah, where was it? Someone had said something about an event in January. All right, let's just, well, search to find someone that said the word January. Oh, there it is. I mean, that could be potentially huge.
A stenographer in your pocket.
Yeah, right. I mean, lots of potential. And obviously it's going to be dependent on how good the voice is. I said that, and how just, you know, how good the translation is, but you're going to be 70-80% there based on what I've seen a lot of this in the past. So that's exciting. We'll see if it filters back to any other devices. You know, Google's been building this voice model all over the place. I mean, they're bringing it on the assistant devices themselves as well, right? So that's not necessarily in the cloud, that's local.
Right. So, there's an improvement coming to Google Assistant in general, and they demonstrated that on stage with more contextual things.
And they say that every year.
A series of like 8 questions. So it was started off with about a particular music artist, and then are they touring and sending messages to your friends about wanting to go and, you know, getting tickets from Ticketmaster. And it was all in a series of contextual demonstrations of how it'll work, just boom, 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 boom. And you're right. It was like years ago when we were first starting BBQ, 3 actions, 4 actions. Now it's like 8 or 10 actions in context.
It's like we're playing Simon, though. Every year we have the same demo and they add one additional thing that it can do, because a lot of the stuff has already been done. But trying to get it to work in practice, sometimes it works. The idea of combining queries was supposed to work a lot more fluidly than it still is. Sometimes you can say, play Bruno Mars and turn the volume to 10, but you have to be very specific about the command. Yeah. You can't say, play Bruno Mars at volume 10, which is what you should be able to say.
Phones are available black, white, orange, come in a range of 64 and 128 gigabytes. Does the 128 size bother you?
I mean, I just got my groceries.
I see that they beat... They beat the podcast this time.
I didn't have as many items. Okay, so yeah, I have a 128.
Another 3.5 lightning adapter. That's what it was.
No, not this time. I haven't lost it yet. Getting close. So my Pixel 3 XL is on 128, and I still have about half left of that. You know, with most music being on the cloud, that's pretty much fine to me. I'm surprised that they don't do a 256. Or something, because there are other people that are not in my situation that would have more offline things, especially games, or a lot of things that have things that you download more of. So I'm surprised they don't offer one, because they don't have a memory card. Do I need it? No, but I would think they would have. Why not? You know, just have an extra $100. Your cost of your memory is $10. Why not? Why aren't you offering it for $9.99?
Because you get 3 months of Google One for free instead of 100 gigabytes of Google Photo storage.
You can't put apps there.
Uh-huh. Exactly. This is going to be available on all carriers, not just Verizon in the U.S. So yes. That's definitely a positive.
Yeah, you could always get it for all carriers, but you had to buy it unlocked and then bring it to your carrier. So it always worked with all of them, but to actually be able to go to a store. And that's good. That's a big thing that they needed to do to try to get more acceptance for the Pixel. So now it comes down to... the question, Samsung's always announcing a new phone. Yeah, they have new Galaxies coming out soon again, but I'm not going to wait for that. You know, no. I don't think anything's changed, has it? So, you know, iPhone 11 versus Google Pixel 4. I don't think the answer to anyone's which phone should I get question has changed because of either of these releases. It's just, if you're with the iPhone 11, you've been with the iPhone for a while and you're very happy with it, there's nothing to get you to cross over to the Google Pixel side. And it goes the same way the other way around. But these phones keep getting better and better. So if you do want to try something different, if you're frustrated with what you are currently holding, I've told people for a long time, if you're going to go to Android, to look at the Google One phones, largely the Pixels, over Samsung and over other phones because of the accessibility that you're going to get, and because of the things like new features, Lookout, which came out a few months ago, came to Pixels first, and some of the other features, that voice recorder that we talked about, is going to be on the Pixel 4. It won't be on whatever Samsung or other phone you get. It's only on the Pixel 4 for now. So if you want some of these, especially accessibility features, as they come out, you want to get the latest phones and definitely want to get the Pixels.
You know, the camera updates are going to come down to the older phones. They've said that the camera API for 7.1 is going to go down to the 3 and the 3A. The 3A is still a very attractive phone.
Yeah.
If you don't want to spend a bunch of money to play around with Android, so you have some familiarity with TalkBack and Android, that's probably the best way to do it, to have the Google experience on a phone
and
at a very
cheap,
affordable price. Yeah, really cheap.
Like around $400 still, I think, what we're seeing for the 3A.
Yeah, and that's before Black Friday.
Right. You know, and looking at the Pixel, like the 3s, I've seen 3s floating around for around $400 now to a regular 3. So, you know, you certainly can get into the Android game for a lot less than even the lowest priced current iPhone, especially if price is a thing for you. And obviously, in many countries where you can't really do payment plans, that is why Android is so dominant. It's a little closer here in the U.S. because of our country's economic status and because of other things. The gap between iOS and Android is a lot smaller. Android is definitely way more popular in other countries, you know, a lot of them where it's 80-90% to 10. But of course, it's down to what you like and what you want to consider.
As far and as don't you forget, know. You've got Apple Music on Android now, so remember, even Apple makes distinctions about their services a little differently than it used to be. Hardware versus hardware, walled garden versus walled garden. When you start really promoting services, that kind of erodes those platforms down a little bit. So it comes down to consumer choice or what you know or what you like. So there is a lot to think about when considering that. And as we've said on the show before, it's good to have options. If you limit yourself to one platform and that platform has some horrible problems, iOS 13! Then you might find yourself at a really bad position without any backups or any ability not to be able to get to your information or your data or your way of buying groceries or your way of checking email that you really like to do. And so it is coming to a world where you have to have, you know, there used to be the flashy phone and then the candy bar phone, right? You know, this is the phone I have for work. This is the phone I have for home, or this is my going out phone. Boy, I'm dating myself here. So there used to be why you would have two phones on a plan. We're kind of back to that. If you feel very strongly that you need access to things, then you may be looking at a situation where you're not turning in your phone. You're keeping that older phone longer because it works and it's reliable, and you're holding it back so you don't do automatic updates on the newer phone or on the older phone, so you have one that works. I mean, that's why I keep an iPad back on iOS 10 for this very reason. Also, I don't want to lose my 32-bit audio games. So there are some downsides to running and jumping on the latest. And I don't think anything is bulletproof anymore. I think that's what my theory is going to be going into our year-end wrap-up, is that I think we've seen this year especially that being the latest and the greatest and on the newest doesn't necessarily win you any brownie points anymore.
So we do have some user comments. We'll get to that a little bit later. So some tweets that have come in over the course of the show. And I'm just trying to keep up with all of them, which is great.
That's kind of nice when we do that. We sometimes scream into the void and nothing comes back.
Before we do anything else, and I don't know how much time we have to do anything else, but the first thing I'd like to do, because it has a lot to do with Google, aside from the Pixel 4 and aside from even Android, because you can do this on an iOS device as well, Google Maps got an update last week largely for blind people, but one of those things that's kind of cool for lots of people, more verbose walking directions. So essentially, when you go out and you try to walk somewhere, it will tell you a lot more details about how far it is to the next corner or the next major light or how many feet until you turn. It gives you much more verbal updates. So I've actually seen it on a lot of mainstream blogs touted as a feature for, hey, anyone who wants to keep their phone in their pocket, you can use this as well. So it's one of those features that was designed, I think, primarily for blind people, but it does a lot more than that. So I'm talking about it. It's probably a lot cooler to demo. The demo I found online that I was going to originally use was in Japanese. I don't know if I had all the directions were in Japanese.
Oh.
Okay. So we're going to give you an English demo. So let's we'll slide that in. We'll be back right after that.
So it's a beautiful fall day here in Michigan. Weather's a bit crisp. It's October now. But I still want to go walking places, which is cool. Because Google, as I've just said, has enhanced the walking navigation. Now, pretty much what they've done is added several prompts and things that can supplement the directions that you're already getting. How do you turn this on? You go to Settings in Google Maps, and then under Settings, you go to Navigation, and under Navigation Settings, there is an option. There's a bush there. Hey, there's an option for Enhanced Walking Directions. That's the one you want to turn on. This will work on both Android or iOS. So I've turned that on already, and let's try navigating to a nearby place to see what we get. So I'm going to stop for a second so I can tell Google. Navigate to the Shell on Michigan Avenue by walking.
It's a 3-hour, 17-minute transit ride to the walking company.
Hey,
do you want to navigate there?
No. Get walking directions to Shell on Michigan Avenue.
The best way to get to Shell on foot is via Eleanor Street and Northwest Nedge Avenue, and will take about 4 minutes.
We're going to press start.
Head east on Eleanor Street toward Northwest Nedge Avenue. It's about 310 feet to your next turn.
So that 310 feet to your next turn bit, that's new. Before, it would always tell you to head east on Eleanor Street. Now, one thing that would still be cool, Google has added AR navigation, augmented reality. This is a visual thing where you can point your phone and it will tell you which way to start. It's still difficult in some situations to figure out which way to go if you don't know the neighborhood. Do I start out by going right or left? This is a problem that Google is trying to solve through the augmented reality feature for people who can see the arrows on the phone. So I hope that someday soon that they can make the same feature accessible to blind people, because that is still a missing piece. But we're walking on Eleanor, and it does tell us, with additional information, it's 310 feet to Michigan Avenue. And we'll just kind of keep walking here and we'll see what it does. I know where I'm going, but it's still an interesting exercise to see how maps is going to treat this.
Turn right onto Northwest Nedge Avenue.
That's the direction that we would have always gotten. So we will do that. Hey, it's a train, of course. It wouldn't be a podcast episode without a train coming up behind us. All right, so we've turned on West Nedge Avenue. We're going to head off towards the gas station.
It's about 800 feet to your destination.
Again, so that's an additional piece of information that you would not have gotten before turning this feature on. It'd be cool to know what the next turn is. I could ask Google, although the shell is on a corner up here on this street. So still walking down here on West Nedge. If we can just fast forward a little bit through some of the walking, because it gets a little annoying to listen to. What I do typically is I use Google Maps in the background, and I use Nearby Explorer, which you could have Nearby Explorer announce various things as you're walking, including distance to next street. But sometimes it doesn't give you exactly what you want, and having this additional mode, I think, is a nice little addition to all of that. What I've heard it do in some situations on maps is it'll say, you're still going the right way, you're now 500 feet away, or something. So we'll see if it gives us an update anytime soon as we come down towards the corner.
You're still on the correct route. Currently heading south on Northwest Nedge Avenue. It's about 298 feet to your destination.
So I'm not sure how often that is set to go off, if it's a time thing, if it's a distance thing, like once a minute, something to that effect. But it's nice to know. It will help you, or I think it could help you, especially if you want to make sure you're still going the right way and you don't want to turn off. And of course, if you want to know quicker that you went off the path, I know sometimes I've ended up off the path and it was 5 minutes later, then you finally realize that you're off the path. Now there is a big
West road. Michigan Avenue is ahead on your route. It's a large road. Use caution while crossing.
That's cool. So West Michigan Avenue is a 5-lane road, and it's going to tell you that it is that. This is a large road. I guess Google probably doesn't have exact details on distance and things like that. What also doesn't exist in the world is data on streetlights. Now, I just turned around and I'm walking the wrong way. Let's see what happens. Let's see how long it takes for maps to let me know what I just did. It's entirely the wrong thing to do. A lot of what you get on maps and any other navigation app depends on the data that you get. It's nice being known that that's a large road. You could probably hear that by the traffic too, but at night especially, I think having that destination is an additional nice to have feature. It doesn't hurt, it doesn't get in my way. And in general, this is really kind of a cool start. There's certainly obviously other things that I could think of that it would be cool to have as additions, especially knowing which way to go at the beginning. Now Google still hasn't told me that I'm going the wrong way. I know sometimes it takes a minute for it to realize that I've gone off the path, especially because I didn't turn. So we're actually walking the route entirely backwards. at this point. Perhaps if I would have turned the wrong way on Michigan Avenue up there, I would have got a notification more quickly. Now, you can still touch the screen. 2 minutes. My speech is jacked way up, but yes, 411 feet, 11:16 a.m. And that time is going up. So if you're looking at your screen, you can see that the distance units are going up instead of down. So I would have liked a notification by now. Hey, something ain't right here. And I'm a little surprised that Google hasn't caught on to this fact or played a little boom, boom. That sound effect, you know, the one that tells you that you missed your turn or that you went off the way. So I actually made another turn. I'm headed back the other way, and walking directions appears to have forgotten about me, although it's still on the screen. There it goes.
It looks like you've left the route, so I'll reroute you. Turn right onto Northwest Edge Avenue.
So, I have left the route, and I'm going the wrong way, and now it's telling me to turn right on West Edge. The piece that's still missing from any mapping program like this is, where is West Edge Avenue from here? How do I turn right on it? And how do I get away from this playground? Because, you know, someone who could visually do this could look at the map and see, oh, West Edge is behind me.
Head east on Eleanor Street toward Northwest Edge Avenue. It's about 159 feet to your next turn.
And if I could access the compass, so east on Eleanor towards West Edge, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you get the idea? I would say it's definitely two steps forward as far as the walking navigation. There's certainly more things that could be added, but as far as a feature that can be useful, I don't see any good reason not to turn it on. You might as well try it. It's going to give you a little more guidance.
It looks like you've left the route, so I'll reroute you. Head north on Old Orchard Place toward Eleanor Street. It's about 21 feet to your next turn.
And as you can see, I'm just perpetually lost. Well, let me get back to the studio so we can finish the rest of the podcast.
Okay, and the other thing that Google announced on the blog, accessibility blog, they've been doing a lot of those for Disability Awareness Month here in October. They announced that there was image description in Google Chrome. This was actually going to be one of our tips a couple of weeks ago, but we didn't have time for it. But you actually could go into Google Chrome and set it to look at images on the web in Chrome, and it will describe them to you. In a lot of cases, if there's text, it will actually scrape it and read it to you, which is even better. And it works fairly well in a lot of cases that I've seen. Ars Technica is one of my favorite places to do it because there's a picture next to the article and it always reads that icon. And so you get an idea of what that icon is before you even read the story if you're going just down arrow through their website.
That's funny. I thought I had demoed this and I was looking through and I go, I don't think we ever did. It's been around. Yeah. It's been in the office for a few months. So here's essentially what you do. If you get to a spot that says in Chrome, it'll say image description not available. You can right click to identify it. I forget the exact verbiage. You can press you can do Shift F10 or the application key or right click with the mouse on the image. And then you can, under recognition options, you can say, actually the option you want to choose is called get image descriptions from Google. And then there's always or just once. I've always done just once. I don't like these things that are automatically applied to the world. So I always choose
sometimes
just
once. Sometimes it can slow down your web experience because it's always getting them for everything on the page.
Yeah, exactly. So I just do just once. And it's the same image recognition that you've seen in some of the other Google products as far as identifying things. Google Lens on your camera does a lot of the same stuff. You know, these things kind of get used over and over, which is very cool. But it definitely gives you, you know, a pretty general description of an image. Someday we should just start going through and comparing all these different services with the same images and see what we get. It'll be kind of an interesting little segment at some point that would take some time to figure out, but it'd be really cool. But
they also had Action Blocks, which was a thing for cognitive disabilities mm-hmm. to make widgets more familiar to people who have cognitive issues, understanding some of the more technical aspects of things. They've improved routines. There was a lot of talk about home routines and how you'll be able to do more macros. It's kind of a answer back to Siri and Shortcuts. Both have been doing language like this for a while. So this is more of a, I see you and I raise you one. The other thing that we're not going to touch too much on, but we thought it was worth mentioning is that they're actually doing something that David Ward demonstrated on this particular program. If you heard last month, him demonstrate that Alexa guard dog thing, this is kind of the same thing. They have Nest Aware, and the Nest Aware service will actually not only provide you a video of your home through your Nest cams or your home security cameras, but they also will listen in on your Google Home devices. They'll make your microphones active. And if it detects noises, you know, dogs barking or things that shouldn't be there, and they know geolocation, that you're not home, none of your devices are home, then it will alert you, and you actually have the Google Home app will have a tab specifically for Nest Aware, so you can go over your devices and have a better idea about security. Now, that sounds crazy, but let me say this. Ricky had to go to a thing in Hadley in September. When I updated to iOS 13, I didn't realize that iOS 13 was kind of shutting off all my location services on my apps and making me agree again to use them. One of the things that I didn't realize got turned off geolocation-wise was my Nest thermostat app. And so one day after we were recording this show, I was like, it's incredibly hot in here. I wonder what's going on. And I talked to my Google Home and it told me that no one was home. Said that it was an eco mode because it detected nobody was in the house. And so I had to go in to Google Nest and verify that I was me and that this was my phone and my phone was in the house and that I definitely didn't want it to be almost 80 degrees. So when the technology works, it really does work. So the problem I have here, Jay, and I'm kind of worried about this, is we just killed iTunes, right? iTunes just died right in macOS Catalina, and slowly working its way to death's door on Windows. Part of the reason why iTunes had to die was that it was bloated. It was just full of stuff. It feels like the more they keep shoving in the Google Home app, that's like the new version of iTunes.
Yeah, and Google can't make up their mind. Sometimes they'll release 10 different apps to do the, you know, 10 different functions of the same thing. And then the year later, they'll change their mind. Oh, yeah, now we're going to combine all these things back into one app. And there are a few things. Messaging is the biggest one that comes to mind, but calendar / reminders / keep / what, you know, whatever.
Task. Hangout / duo / yes. I agree wholeheartedly.
And you have, you know, are they going to put the Nest app into the Home app now too? Is that all kind of been meshed in as well? Or do you still use the Nest app?
Well, they did finally announce that they're having a partner summit and where they were going to orphan off the Works with Nest program, but now they're going to have like a third party way for them to pass a security audit and find a migratory way to get into the Works with Google, which is the Google Home action system. I have not moved my Nest over there, my Nest thermostat over there, because it's a one-way trip. If you decide to leave the old system and go to the Google system, you're orphaned off regardless. And I was still trying to figure out if all my devices would be fine with that, my smart lighting, my washer, my dryer. I think I'm okay. But it's, again, you know, the way that they made this sound to me as a user, you do this, that's it. That's not really inviting. And so I've kind of held back until they make me do it. The same way with Google Play Music. I like Google Play Music, although Patrick made me very depressed with a study that he had read about how it had the most artifacts out of all the streaming
music. Yeah, we didn't notice until then. So.
I'll get to that in a sec. Google Play Music, I love, you know, it's a thing that we use and we have, and moving me to YouTube Music doesn't make me happy because I'm paying Google money for a service that I enjoy. And so
it's just the same thing.
Ish. No, The experience is not the same. The UI is not the same. They said that they're pulling over our music lockers, you know, because I have like 35 gigs worth of music in Google Play Music. And I think it's a trust factor again. You know, one of the things Google did this month was they had a graveyard for all the products that they've killed as a Halloween joke. But for those of us who are Google fans, it wasn't really funny. It was more of a, oh, I miss you. You were so cool. Now you're gone. And that's kind of the hard thing. And this is what I was coming back to a second ago about the noise. Last month, we had a problem with our Google Max pair and we were getting pops and we were trying to figure out, okay, is it the router? Okay. Is it maybe the band is too crowded. Let me move them down to 2.4. Okay. It's not that. Maybe it's the power. Let me look at this. Let me change out the way that, the AC adapter is working. I went through all this troubleshooting, went through our router, went through the logs, speed test, all of this, only to come to find out that after they announced the stream transfer feature that I demonstrated last week, that everything was fine. Google went public with this on their public servers, and it was affecting my general experience. And so I lost productivity time and a lot of, well, I had a lot of swears already, but I lost more time swearing at this, troubleshooting this, when it was a feature that they were rolling out poorly across the network publicly instead of, you know, holding it in beta and then flipping it across. And then after this came out, then everything was fine. And I made my pact, which is I just don't want to plan any more big events between in my life other than these events between September and October, because everything breaks. My Apple stuff is breaking. My Microsoft stuff is breaking. And now my Google stuff is breaking. So I thought it was fine because I'm not in any preview programs on Google. I'm not a part of any I'm not a part of any trust initiatives, none of it. So as a general user, my experience was being degraded because they were trying to propagate this out and they're not very transparent about that.
Well, you know, there's a lot of things are getting updated, which is cool. We'll definitely, if there's certain things that we've mentioned that you want us to try to demo, let us know. feedback@blindbargains.com. We'll see what we can do. Other things are kind of filtering out as we're recording. Looks like there's a new beta cycle beginning for TalkBack on Android 8.1. The only thing that we're noticing so far is that it's being a lot more verbose in certain areas, and some people like it, and most people are saying it's talking too much, because those are the advanced TalkBack users who've been using it forever.
And Braille screen input, right? No?
Well, we don't know.
No?
Well, we have no release notes.
Okay.
So
we'll just tap it randomly and do a couple of coins. See if something happens. Yeah.
See if anything like that happens.
Just for fun.
Yeah. We'll kind of keep an eye on. We'll keep an eye on that as far as Android stuff. And we have a lot of other news that we're gonna have to. Looks like I wasn't sure. Yeah, I guess we're gonna push it next week because we've somehow filled enough on Google. But don't worry. Yes, we're aware of certain things that have happened, you know, regarding pizza and regarding other stuff. And a lot of callbacks,
things that we've talked about previously have come to fruition and have been verified. So that's kind of nice.
David Ward is in episode 190, by the way. I had to look it up for you.
Oh, there you go. Okay. With the Alexa kitten. Yep. All right, cool. The thing that I do appreciate about what we do is that we get to hear from you, the listeners, about things that you like and don't like. Jay, you threw it out to the crowds. Do we have any questions that we need to address before we wrap this thing up?
Yeah. Jesus, I believe that is Cyclops 22. Has anyone tried the Nest Hub with any kind of screen reader? Is there TalkBack even there? Not the Nest Hub, but the other video devices that Google has done have all had speech capabilities on them as far as the Home Hub.
Yeah, the Home Max. Yeah.
No, the Max is a speaker. The Hub. We're talking about the Hubs. The one.
Well, no. The what was it? The Nest Home. Mm-hmm. Nest Home Hub. That one. That, okay, yeah. Yes. I hate this branding. But yes, the ones that have like the 7-inch screen and the little speaker on the bottom of it, they were actually letting us play around with that at CSUN when it had been announced last year. So there are people who are using it with TalkBack.
Yep. And generally you would turn that on from the Home app. Like just whatever.
You can always go to Google's accessibility page, or you can go to the manual for those devices if you're ever curious, because the information is generally there about accessibility and how to turn accessibility on.
Changeling MX just commenting, I personally thought it was the most boring Keith Moon I've ever watched. Also extremely disorganized. Oh, so was this show.
Disorganized, I won't agree with, because they had this layered approach. It just wasn't very obvious. But the guy talking about the camera was like a math professor, and it was fascinating stuff. Don't get me wrong. It was really interesting, but it was dry as just the desert dry. It was like, as I said on Twitter, it was like watching a sundial, but I mean, it was still fascinating. It was just, masterclass, you know, on sleepiness.
Yeah. I've mentioned before, and maybe because I'm a programmer, I definitely have more interest in both the Apple and Google spring events than the fall ones, mostly because, you know, they cover a lot more of what's new in, you know, the operating system. And what's Android Q, the whole Android Q release, separating it from the Pixel, I think hurts Google a little bit. You lose some of that fanfare. It just kind of came out the end of it. Okay, yeah, there's the update. And, you know, there was no big fanfare for it. And
like a week later, they already announced the next beta.
Yeah, but not as many as iOS.
Major hold number. Yeah, no. No, which has another update at the time of this recording. So that's four shows in a row where we've had an Apple patch.
Is that how that goes every week?
I think so.
For the past 2 years, they keep trying to push Chromebooks on the general populace, but I've never seen them take hold outside of education, says Steve. Do consumers really use these things? I kind of pretty much covered that answer earlier. Man, you know, yeah, some do. And hey, I would love for someone... You don't notice a lot of Chromebook, by a lot, I really mean hardly any Chromebook demos by us, because, well, we don't have them. And I would love to be proven wrong and have someone, you know, if you use a Chromebook as your daily device and it's the only thing you use other than a phone, I would love to hear from you, because, you know, maybe it's just one of those things that we're stuck in, you know, these people are just stuck on outdated principles. Well, I don't know. But everything, you know, yeah. I haven't picked one up lately. Like I said, running Android, I think, definitely changes the game a little bit as far as what you can do with it. So that's certainly better.
And if you're looking to break into the assistive technology industry, which is continuously consolidating, getting smaller, not larger, but it is on the local level, then being the expert in something like, say, Chrome OS will get you a lot of influence, a lot of looks, a lot of work, if you really want to put your efforts into something, because iOS trainers... Though that's kind of easy to find. Everybody has it. It's a standard. People know. Windows trainers, depends where you live. But when you're getting into something like Android, when you're getting into something like Chrome OS, you can actually be a bit of a superstar in your general area, if not nationally, if you want to devote yourself to that. And it can lead to bigger and better things, because you'll get noticed by Google and other people if you're really big into that kind of thing. So that can actually help you a great deal if that's any motivation for you. But I'm with JJ. There's only so much that we can play with on the show. There's only so much that we can actually know in general, because there's so much different tech out there. It's the same way that Jay was doing some of the Amazon stuff, because I wasn't.
And look, we do this show and we put some time towards these week, but it's not our full-time job. It's part of what we do. And we don't have 40 hours a week to be spending on playing with this stuff. I wish we did, but obviously there's other things going on in the world. So we can't get to it all, which is why we rely on the users and our awesome listeners, who can email us at feedback@blindbargains.com. There's been lots of things that have happened over the years at the internet, and you have a story about the beginnings of that, and then I have a story about that just came through that you may have seen about more of the beginnings of that, but the later beginnings of that.
Oh yeah, down in the last word.
Yeah.
Oh well, I picked this story out because I figured Patrick would probably be able to tell us all from him or Buddy Brandon could tell us all from memory what the noises on the modems meant and what they signified and why we had to hear all that. Well, Patrick's favorite noises, he'll put them right here. So each one of those had a reason, and this article actually explains that. There's been a large number of explanatory articles about what the barcode is. I have that in my Twitter feed, and what these noises meant when you were going to Prodigy or CompuServe or AOL or any number of things back in the dial-up internet days. And it changed over the years when you went from early modems from 300 all the way up to, you know, 56K.
Wow. Hey, well, I think don't outtake that. Just leave that right in the show as my
destroyer. That's your last word? Is that your last word? The timing was perfect.
Hey, no, okay, we're gonna leave it right there. Yeah, early modems. So I came in. I had a 2400 for about a day, and then went to straight to 14.4 to 20. But you could tell. I am not the encyclopedia that Patrick is, but you certainly could tell. Back in the days when we dialed in the bulletin board systems, as soon as you called, which speed you were going to get. Because the 56 yeah. sounded a lot busier than a 14.4 or 28.8 modem. These are K for you young kids. These are not Meg. Right. This is K.
No.
And that's what we had.
I even had one for the Sega Saturn. There was an actual modem that you could connect. And of course, the Sega Dreamcast had its own modem inside it. And, you know, just think about that, your video game console making dial-up noises. You know, you expect it from your computer and all. But yeah, there's some crazy stuff. I actually, on that Sega Genesis Mini that I demonstrated with Ricky last week, or at least let her kind of give you a physical description of, there was actually a thing called the Sega Channel. And you could only access it through cable networks. So, you know, if your cable TV station, your cable TV company would offer you the Sega Channel, you had to download the game into the console, and then you could never turn it off because it was just an EEPROM, and if you turned it off, it was gone. One of those games is actually on the Mini, which I thought was really cool. And it was one of the reasons why I picked it up, because it's not in any of the other collections that I have of classic games like that. So it's interesting to look back at that and know that there was an actual reason why some of those tones were made.
Well, that was the early days of the internet, and slightly less early days of the internet. You know, we, for better or worse, especially in our community, I've done a lot with mailing lists over the years. We need some like somber, like funeral music here, because we need to do a bit of an ode to Yahoo groups.
Oh yes, I did see this morning.
Yeah.
Oh.
And I'm looking through. Apparently, some of my groups that I was in are still active. I'm not sure if I just stopped getting mail from them, or most of the groups that I was in, that's not been used for many years. We've moved on to other mailing list software, Google Groups, Groups.io, whatever. But I have,
yeah, a lot of those free lists. Remember freelist.org.
But I'm seeing, and it wasn't all blindness stuff, but you know, there certainly was a fair amount of like, the different blind ad groups. There was a big hullabaloo at one point when they started adding ads to groups. They're like, oh, we can't have ads, and they're above the messages. And that's where a lot of people kind of ran away. But, you know, I'm seeing a few. There's a train enthusiast groups that I was on. There was Peeps Bargains was on Yahoo, which was one of the, I think it was For the People group, and looks like a few people were still posting to it. It's the ID Mate group, are they still?
That's still active? Oh, that's funny.
And it's still being, it's still a Yahoo groups list. So anyway, if you have a Yahoo group, first of all, you download, if you're the owner, you can download the archive of your group. And I encourage you to do that for posterity. And then the groups themselves are pretty much going dormant in a couple months. Yahoo, you know, is definitely reorganizing as they're, you know, being owned by Verizon Media. They make a lot more money off of fantasy football and sports and things like that than you do from email lists. And
agreed.
One of those relics of another time. You know, I'm surprised Google's kept their groups going this long, but they use enough of them internally that they probably won't.
Yeah, that's the beauty of having eating your own dog food, is that you're using a lot of that information internally and then using it as an external way. Microsoft is still kind of doing that. They're actually using Reddit a bit more. They're retiring some of their forums and moving towards Reddit. So
sending, receiving functionality is not going away. But pretty much things are not going to be archived. So it's like it's an email list pretty much before all the cool features that they added in Yahoo Groups. And then you can, it was really cool. One of the ones that we did way back when, hey, Patrick was with us, our old internet radio station. I need to dig up the archives. I think we have our staff list for Test Pattern Radio 2001 and 2002. Test Pattern
Radio. Forget about all the others.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
Yeah, oh my goodness. Back when internet radio was a big thing and everyone was like trying to get their stations going. Yeah, wow.
I loved broadcast.net. That was one of my favorites. A lot of things happened on broadcast.net that, you know, we see now, like you could rate music on, you know, a 0 to 5, and
yep,
it would pass you information that you really liked about your artists and things. And that was an old, I believe Mark Cuban started that and then sold it off. So yeah, broadcast.net was one of my favorites. I guess because I've been on the Usenet boards and BBS for so long, I've kind of gotten used to the idea that this information just becomes lost. But at the same time, the Internet Archive just posted like 2,500 DOS games, and you can run them in DOSBox.
Ooh, look what I just found.
That was just
the All In Play Beta Group.
Oh my goodness.
Wow. Okay.
Wow.
Tell us your favorite Yahoo Groups memories. Feedback at blindbargains.com.
Oh, and
as we try to memorialize some of these things for the future, and there is a lot of blindness content on these groups. So again, if you're a group owner, get this stuff archived so we don't lose a lot of, I mean, when we especially talk about older technology, that stuff disappears. You know how hard it is to find drivers and information sometimes on older blindness
manuals.
Tech? Yeah, manuals. Yeah. A lot of the stuff is sitting on these groups. So let's see what we can do to get this stuff. But thank you so much for listening this week. Good to be back for now.
Yeah. And I guess we're almost done with all of the big events. We may have an Apple one. We'll have to see. Yeah. Rene Ritchie isn't jumping up and down saying he's flying somewhere. So on Twitter over at iMore, he's usually the litmus post for that, in that there is another event that's about to happen. But we will have to see. Oh, yeah. If we don't, that's cool. I'm done with these events. Because that's really cool. But we do have a lot of links. So if you're more interested in what we had to say on this show or need a little bit more background, you can always go over to blindbargains.com, go over to podcast, go over to this particular episode at 196 and see a bunch of informational links that I have posted there for your reading enjoyment. You can learn a lot about that by following me on Twitter, Ranger Station, all one word. So a lot of these links end up in my Twitter feed and you could read them there in real time. And you can have a discussion with me and others about them. Feel free to go ahead and do that. And there's also some information in there about, Disney Plus. Jay, did you see Mika White was all excited about all of the show's 360 different titles coming to Disney Plus next month?
All right, that's not bad. I mean, we'll see how it all combines. I can combine it with my ESPN Plus subscription. But yeah, so the big events, the mainstream events are done. The fall AT Guys schedule is just starting up. So hello to anyone who came by last week in Taylor, Michigan at World Sight Day, which is a holiday I'd never even heard of until a couple years ago. But now more and more companies are celebrating it. Eh, whatever. Anyway, but the event itself was cool over at the Taylor Library. We have more coming up. NFB Colorado is November 1 and 2. The Andrew Hyskow Community Culture Technology Fair. And there might be a word, more another word to that title. It's huge. It's a big title, but we're coming back to that. It's Chansey and everyone else over there puts that event on. Very cool. Over in New York City on November 6th, NFB Michigan is November 8th to 10th, and NFB Maryland is November 8th to 10th. We'll be at both of those. NFB Texas in Austin, November 15 to 17th. Maryland's in Baltimore, Michigan's in Grand Rapids. There you go. There's our fall schedule. We'll keep adding on to it or updating it as we go.
Well, we appreciate your time and listening to this particular event. We'll get back to some more news-related information next week. We thank you for listening. And remember, you can send us your thoughts. And if we got something wrong, like I said in a previous episode, we're happy to make corrections as you let us know. It is a part of this program and has been for years. Thanks to wonderful listeners like you who go out there, rate us, and pass around the idea to rate others as well, because there are some other great podcasts out there that are doing some great work too. So when you're in Apple, podcast, if you're in another podcast app and you see us alongside some of the other great ones out there, be sure to give them a listen and a subscribe and a rate as well.
That's going to do it, folks. Thank you, Patrick, for making us sound great as well. And we will see you next time.
This has been another Blind Bargains audio podcast. Visit blindbargains.com for the latest deals, news, and exclusive content. This podcast may not be retransmitted, sold, or reproduced without the express written permission of AT Guys.
Copyright 2019.
With no more wrap-up shows?
Yeah.
Please, no more wrap-up shows. Please.
No, we're done.
Please.
No, I got food to eat, so, yeah.
I've been hitting Control L a lot lately to get links. I
kinda, oh, yeah.
Kind of done. Hooray!